break out case conceptualization from the confines of just a treatment plan and look at it as a central component of our identity as healers and therapists, that really what we are is professional case conceptualizers. We're trained and built and really spent years of practice trying to understand the how and the why behind a clinical presentation, because just as you referenced from Nietzsche, once you know those things, the what is going to come.
You're listening to episode 86 of the Play Therapy Community Podcast.
Welcome to Play Therapy Community Podcast, providing connection, information, and inspiration to child therapists all around the world. Here's your host, a licensed psychotherapist, a registered play therapist, and my mom, Jackie Flynn.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Play Therapy Community Podcast. I love joining you like this. At the time of this recording, it is mid-June here in Central Florida. It's starting to get hot, but you can hear the cicadas. I love that sound. It's so beautiful. I'm getting ready to go on a trip to go see Pompeii, which is like my dream come true. I'm going to just pack a backpack. So I'm just going to go very light and go see something that I have literally been dreaming of for decades. So I'll let you guys know how that goes. Well, today I have an episode that I've been looking forward to for a long time. It is with Bridger Falkenstein. He is one of the hosts from the Notice That podcast. It's an EMDR podcast. I'm an EMDR trained therapist and I'm certified and I'm a consultant, and I have seen big things come from that therapy, lots and lots of healing. So we're going to have a conversation today on somatic integration processing. But before we get started, I want to give a shout out for our sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by the EMDR Learning Community. The EMDR Learning Community, and I'm definitely a part of it, it's a big part of my work and a big part of the kind of way that I gather and consume information that helps me. In that community, we connect with clinicians from around the world. We read books together, we have discussions, we learn from some of the top in our field. I know the host of it, his name is Roten Breyer, and he does these interviews. He just recently had an interview with Robin Shapiro. I had her training, it was incredible. And he did one with Dr. Debbie Korn and Michael Baldwin on their book, Every Memory Deserves Respect. It's, you know, for EMDR. That book was so good. I listened to it on Audible twice, and now I'm going to order the hard copy. It was incredible. So in that EMDR learning community, we really just grow together. Professional development in our field is essential because we work with some really tough stuff, and to have information, inspiration, and connection. People do better together when we share and we lean on each other for support. And that's what the EMDR learning community is all about. So if you would like to join the EMDR learning community, you do need to be trained in EMDR to join. But if you're not trained, definitely I highly recommend you need to start with the basic training, and you can find lots of basic trainings at emdria.org. EMDRIA.org. But in that community, we focus on so many EMDR related topics, and you can find that at EMDR-learning.com. Okay, so let's get on with today's episode. So I'm here with Bridger, and I do want to give you just a little background of my experience with Bridger. So I found this podcast, Notice That. I love podcasts. Notice That on iTunes, and I started listening to it, and I shared it with our local EMDR No Fee study group, and we like went crazy over it. We're like using their podcast as topics of our study discussions, and each episode seemed like a training. I would like listen to it on the way to the grocery store and just sit in the car to finish it out before I went in, because I was able to gather that information and use it in my very next session. So I was able to, it still like amazes me. I was able to be a guest on their podcast talking about the polyvagal theory. It's one of my claims to fame. I got to actually meet them and talk to them and share kind of my work with them. But today, which is super cool, Bridger is on our podcast, the Play Therapy Community, and he's going to be talking about something that I don't think is common knowledge, especially in our Play Therapy community, but we definitely need it. And I'm scheduled for one of their trainings in Gainesville, Florida coming up. So Bridger, before we get started in our conversation, let me have you just tell people who you are and what you do.
Yeah. Jackie, thank you so much for having me on. The part that on our side of things in meeting you, there was kind of a similar recognition of another light in the community. So it's cool to hear you talk about how you came to know us when we got to have you on the podcast. You know, myself as a polyvagal trained clinician, you know, definitely aware of some of the things that you were doing and really interested to hear more. And so I've loved to get to know you even more as we've kind of hung out in the EMDR learning community that you just talked about with Rotem and gotten to spend some time together talking about building community in the world of psychotherapy and for those that practice EMDR. So I'm really glad to be on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I had all these notes as you were talking on the intro that I was like, oh, I want to talk about that right now. So that's so funny. But yeah, so I am the creative director of an organization called Beyond Healing. Beyond Healing is a psychotherapy practice. So we have individual clinicians that are in a private practice group setting. Both here in Springfield, Missouri, where I am, as well as in St. Louis, and then Tacoma, Washington. Those partnerships really just emerged because we believe in community, and we believe that community is the answer to our problem with burnout in the field. That community can't just be, yes, I have friends that also practice psychotherapy, but I have friends and really people that I feel are of the same kind of belief that when we come to our practice as healers, we're not just doing a 9-to-5 job, but that this really is coming from a deeper place within us. That when we experience it as a clinician, it's really just a part of who we are. So that community is deeper than just a 9-to-5. And we believe that what we're doing is very special, to say the least. And in that role as the creative director, my kind of responsibilities are one, to kind of think about the direction and vision of the organization. But I was one of the central writers of our kind of, I don't know if you'd call it our main training, but our kind of entrance into the field of therapy training with somatic integration and processing. So I'm here to both just connect with you, Jackie, but also to share a little bit about that, because I know that the people that we're talking to right now and the listeners of this podcast are people that, you know, I kind of just described that do care about their work and want so much to be as helpful as they can to the children and the families that they serve using whatever modality that they are. What we saw in the need to write somatic integration and processing was that, you know, we have so many trainings that tell us what to do. You know, here's the next thing that's going to revolutionize your practice. And it's a modality that has a manual with it. And you go through this training sometimes up to, you know, 5 days long or maybe even months long in a training that definitely has an impact on your practice. You get that sort of mountaintop experience, like, oh my gosh, this is the silver bullet. This is what's going to change everything. But then the second you encounter a situation with a client that doesn't necessarily match what you were prepared for in the training, that kind of goes out the window. And so we put the manual back on our shelf and we long for the day where we get to take another training that tells us what to do. At least that's the kind of perspective that we have. So
you just described it. I've been there. Like, you, I mean, and they can be some really good trainings, but they're not actually actionable. And if it's not actionable, then our clients don't actually benefit from it. So I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and we see that as a problem of how we understand trainings in our professional development. You know, you mentioned that as you were talking about the community, the EMDR learning community. I could not agree more. I think we have to have conversation around what is it about professional development that we still need to talk about. And for us at Beyond, it's not, we need more trainings. We need more people taking trainings that are about what to do. But we really need to take a hard look at the how and why behind what really does work in psychotherapy and in all of these different intervention approaches. And we have a phrase that we kind of use to sum all of that up is that we need to learn how to think. We need to learn how to think. And what that means to us is that you have all of these what to do's. You've gone through so many trainings, I'm sure, at this point. And even if you're just out of grad school, I'm sure there's this longing for what do I do? I've just been taught how to show up with basic, you know, attending skills. And I don't know yet what I'm really doing in the clinical intervention kind of moment where I'm actually sitting with a client. And so you'll spend so much energy trying to find the what to do that we rarely focus on the how and why, which for us is what's at the base of it all. If you can understand the how and why, both the how and why of what's showing up in your clients, as well as the how and why you would go a certain way in the treatment setting, then you're going to be able to use whatever is available to you. Even if no, you know, formalized, manualized treatment is in front of you, you'll still be able to show up in a way, relationship first, bottom up, you know, really focusing on co-regulation. You'll be able to provide a healing space for your clients and interact with them in a way that will bring about the healing that you long for, those treatment goals that you were taught to pursue and that you and your gut want for your clients. If you understand the how and why, you'll be able to use, you know, any number of combinations of a what to do in the therapy room to see those goals come.
Oh my goodness, that's so good. I think about like being when I was a new therapist and traveling from house to house, I had the best workbooks that I could find. And when you go in with just what without the how and why, it just doesn't work. It's more.
You might as well not have those books. They're in your way. Like you have to.
Yes. Yes, it's definitely not common knowledge too. I remember even being a professional school counselor and wondering what the word somatic meant. And because it was on one of the assessments, I think at that time it was like on one of the assessments that looks at like symptoms for ADHD. And I seen the word psychosomatic and I was like, I wonder what that means. But I think there's, at least for some of us, there's this, I should know this. So I'm not going to ask because I don't want to seem like I don't know what I need, what I should know. So the shoulds can definitely get you.
Yep, absolutely.
I love that you're doing this. One thing, Bridger, that I'm thinking about is like in The Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl, he talks about, actually, I think he quotes Friedrich Nietzsche, when there's a why, there's a how.
And yes.
Think about like here we are helping these kids that have experienced just unthinkable trauma. Their nervous systems have adapted to these situations, but they have left them in great states of distress. And if we actually know what's going on, then we don't have to have a list of what to do. We kind of intuitively know what will help in the moment because we have that understanding.
Yeah, I love that you bring Nietzsche into this conversation. What a privilege, number one. But the second thing that came to mind is really if we can use that as sort of a way of understanding this. You know, you said if there's a why, then there's going to be a how. Mm-hmm. And what I find in our culture as psychotherapists is that we don't even get to that degree. We actually go one more step farther into our professional dissociation. Mm-hmm. And we don't say, if there's a why, there's a how, which will look like a what. we focus on give me the what to do. So we skip the identification of why, we skip the identification of how, and we just go straight into what. And all of our trainings, I feel like, are really built around that what. And what we're doing in pointing out the essential kind of component of the somatic element and how that gives way to our emergent mind over the course of our development, we're actually going right back to that very beginning and say, look at the why. Look at where this came from. Look at how it was conditioned in that little human as they grew up over time and how they started to basically just confirm and be mirrored back that those strategies that they developed were essential or the only way that they could really interact. And that's really the how then that says, here's how we can show up. And then we get to what we do, not the other way around where we're saying, here's what we're doing. Doesn't matter what the presentation is. And here's how we'll do it, quote unquote, with all of these different interventions. And if you get to the why, that's fine, but really you're not going to need to pay attention to that because hopefully the what will work for you. You don't really need to dig for the why.
Oh, that's so good. So that's where the workbooks are getting in the way. Focus on
yes.
relationships. Now I know you guys are amazing, but I know one of your mini jams is case conceptualization. Actually kind of looking at the bigger picture. So many of us may not even know what that means. So let's talk about case conceptualization for a little bit, maybe even why is it even important?
Yeah. And I love talking about case conceptualization. I'm beaming from ear to ear right now. To me,
you hear your smile almost.
Yes. You can hear my smile. I love that. Oh, that felt good to my body. I'm just going to save that. The case conceptualization is really the focus of my doctoral degree in counselor education and supervision. And I think that we've put case conceptualization in a really strange place, which I feel has sort of created this professional dissociation that I talked about, where we're not quite sure where we are or who we are, but we're just sort of adrift, trying our best to stay safe enough for long enough to survive. Ooh. That's where you're going to start to see burnout and all of these, my job now drains me as opposed to, brings the energy and vitalization of the ventral safe and connection. That you and I, we talk so much about.
Let me just interject a little bit. Feeling that as a school counselor, and there's like this excitement at the beginning of the year when you like see the kids and everything, but then there is like a noticeable shift when burnout happens, when you don't, and this sounds so sad, it like I could feel it in my heart even thinking about it. You don't necessarily see the kid anymore. You see like in your mind's eye like their IEP plan or the meeting that's scheduled for after hours that you're not going to be able to go to your own kid's soccer game for, those type of things that really kind of, or maybe the child that's struggling so much to where you don't even know where to start. So it leaves you feeling inadequate. So you kind of have like the wind knocked out of your sails of, gosh, I'm going to a job that I'm not really as effective. This kid's not getting what they need. So burnout is real.
Yeah.
Real. I mean, it's a thing. It's a thing that can shut you down and really impact everybody.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And what you just listed out is to me a problem that we have to have a wellness-based approach to addressing. Mm-hmm. And for me as a professional, as a therapist, but as somebody who identifies as a healer, like deeper than just my therapist identity, mm-hmm. I think that we have to have a community that is open and responsive to the reality of what's going on in the room. First and foremost, and again, that word is based in community as well. So there's sort of that tandem dual awareness that we're in a situation that actually validates what we're experiencing, as well as meets us in our friendship and in our just nurturing needs as a community member. We feel engaged and involved and invited. All of those things are essential. The first element that I just described of that act, in a community that actually validates what we're experiencing and what's going on. Mm-hmm. I sometimes joke that, therapy is really made up Like, we just are in this dynamic because we went to school to get there. And so we get to now call ourselves therapists and sit with other people. And they're now called clients or patients. Mm-hmm. And we agree to what treatment goals that we're going to work towards. And then we start doing to each other what those roles kind of line out of what's acceptable to do to someone as a therapist or with someone. Mm-hmm. But in that, I think it misses the entire reality, which is that we're really two humans sitting across from each other. Mm. When you have that lens, you know, I just start to feel goosebumps on my skin when I think about it that way, because that to me really puts into perspective how special the moment is that we're encountering together, that we're two humans who have more in common than we'll ever have that separates us. But that means that when we look at somebody who's struggling, and who's struggling sometimes hurts other people, we can actually find ourselves in it as well, and them in us. And then the how and why really just emerges so naturally. Well, if you're presenting with, you know, all of these behavioral disorders in these kids, mm-hmm. what does it actually feel like to sit with them in their you know, perceived violence?
You can literally feel it. You can literally feel, it's like a shared pain. I think about almost like that scene in Green Mile where he's like so connected with the guy that there's like this interaction. I mean, if you're really attuned to somebody, you can feel their pain, you could feel their happiness, like all of this, like this co-regulation, I guess, you know,
with us
clients or together as clinicians, humanity.
Yes, absolutely. I could not agree more. And I think that that's really another piece that the field is missing, is we have a lot of trainings that are geared towards the role of a therapist. Like when you're in your role as a therapist, it sort of misses that you're a human so much of the time. Mm-hmm. But when you're in your role of therapist, here's what you can do to bring about healing. And when your client, you know, the role of the client shows up and they look like this, here's what treatment you pair with it. Here's what number in the manual you'll go to really bring about the change in this client that you want to see. But it misses that we're actually two mammalian organisms, hardwired for connection, but suspended between this, you know, fear of death and this fear of being alone. All of these things that we across the human species face every single day, that really, if you look deep enough, you can find the origin of whatever, you know, objective diagnosis that a person has. You can really contextualize it back to this person feels unsafe and alone and afraid that they're going to no longer be. and I really do think that those are some of the things that get us caught up in the first place in development, is, you know, all these negative cognitions that we come to develop. They're really just us trying to make sense of how it could be that we're surrounded by people, but alone at the same time.
Oh, that's one of the most painful types of being alone. I know, like, even like as we're born, if we just lay there and no one is there for us, we could die. Like as a human, we need that human connection right away. And it can, even just you saying that you got goosebumps, I got goosebumps. There's this connectivity even through just sound. I don't know if any of the listeners experienced it as well, but this kind of need to be together, it feels safer. It feels like survival, really.
Yes, it's essential. And that's what, you know, as well as, you know, Dr. Borges talks about co-regulation as a biological imperative. We have to connect with one another, or else our species will no longer, you know, continue to exist. And in that, I just see so much that we've left out of so many of our trainings as a field. And so when you ask, like, what is case conceptualization? So often it's taught that case conceptualization is a component of treatment planning, which again, I think is hilarious, because that does all but guarantee that it will stay in the, it's just going to talk about the what to do in therapy, because it's a part of treatment planning, which you design treatment plans around goals, and goals look at the what of what we want to see happen, not the how or the why. And what we've done at Beyond is really break out case conceptualization from the confines of just a treatment plan and look at it as a central component of our identity as healers and therapists, that really what we are is professional case conceptualizers. We're trained and built and really spent years of practice trying to understand the how and the why behind a clinical presentation, because just as you referenced from Nietzsche, once you know those things, the what is going to come. It will naturally show itself to the therapy relationship when we have a shared understanding, both in mind and body, that what is showing up makes sense somehow. When we can look at it through that way, the what is just going to naturally come.
Oh, that's so good. I know Dr. Kathy Malchiati talks about that, like not really kind of leaning on just the techniques, like connecting. And Dr. Siegel talks about connect and reach.
Yes. Yes, yes. And both of those names were sort of at the base of some of our thinking very early on. And so in case conceptualization, often they're paired with their treatment approach. You know, cognitive behavioral therapy has a case conceptualization approach, and so on, you know, down the line of different approaches. And what I think that also does is it silos us from different ways of thinking. It silos us from connecting with other therapists and really learning how to talk with one another if we don't identify with that specific corner of the psychotherapy world. So what we really need in talking about a case conceptualization training is not another, let's just pair it with psychodynamic case conceptualization approach. Let's just pair it with psychoanalytic. Let's pair it with humanistic. We need one that synthesizes, that can really be open to any theoretical orientation. It doesn't matter what you're doing, if you're focusing just on the cognitions or if you're focusing just on the body, just on the physical sensations that someone is experiencing in their body with pain or with discomfort or dysfunction, whatever it might be, we need an overarching framework that helps us translate and understand what is showing up in the human organism. So from we talk about it from cell, you know, from atom to idea, we need a case conceptualization approach that spans that chasm, not just says, well, if we're looking for cognitions, here's how to do it, quote unquote. So it sticks in that cognitive realm, but we're a whole thinking, feeling, behaving, you know, spiriting human. So we need a case conceptualization approach that really covers that whole, host of domains of human experience.
Oh, that's so good. I am thinking about working with intentionality. And I say recently, it's been a couple of years now. I was trained in synergetic play therapy, SBT, by Lisa Dihon. And there's this connection in the play therapy space where we are literally two humans together playing. And what's so cool about play is you can be in the ventral and like either, you know, you can be in that sympathetic state where things feel a little bit overwhelming, maybe a little bit scary, like I may not win this, I may not be able to do this right, but also I'm connected to this other person. It grows resilience. But even like in those spaces, like she shows this video in one of her trainings where the kid stacks up these blocks real tall and it's wobbling and you can see it falling in. And she's not like, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. She's like, oh, it's gonna fall. Oh, this feels scary. And she like has this kind of somatic response in her body. And then she connects with the client in a way that they feel felt. And it's in those moments that there's that humanity and the healing that happens. And it doesn't even, I mean, it's not a worksheet or a coping skill or anything.
Yeah.
Like that is, I'm with another human being and this is what's happening and it's okay.
Yeah. That's another great example of looking at the difference between the approach that I'm talking about and how so many of us enter the field, because I feel our education system creates this perspective. But in that dynamic right there, you're looking at just a block building, you know, exercise or just something a kid is doing in the room. Mm-hmm. If we don't have a thorough case conceptualization approach of what is going on, not just in the parts of things, like, yeah, they're stacking blocks and This could be used to demonstrate what it feels like to feel fear in, you know, the vicinity of another human. Like, that would be a very sad reduction of what could actually take place in that dynamic. Yeah. So if you move more into the how and the why, you can see even in the way that that clinician is showing up, they understand that this is more meaningful than just some blocks that are stacking up. Yes. I have an opportunity here to really connect with this small, you know, little human and help them see kind of fear in me, but that fear can still be connected between the two of us. Like, we can connect over fear instead of run away from it with a shame response. And so as we build this tower up and up, we can really get into our bodies and connect and say, this is scary, but I'm with you. We're going to go and keep going. And as we build up, we're not just saying we're connected. We're showing that we're connected and that we're feeling the same things. And as we know from so much of what neurobiology at this point just resoundingly says, it's about the connection inside the intolerable affect, not the omission or the avoidance of intolerable affect. We actually need to be together because that's how we learn to co-regulate. That's how we learn to actually regulate down these feelings that feel intolerable. And so if we were alone, we would develop an avoidance to those feelings. But together, we can, you know, we're safer together. We can, when we're together, we can regulate some of the most difficult experiences known to humans.
Oh my gosh, that's the with. Even just hearing you kind of say that imagined scenario, I literally felt that in my body, and I don't have any blocks. We're not even actually playing. It's the voice. That's such a powerful like connection. Even like on a professional connection, I mean, even just doing this podcast episode with you, it feels so good to be able to get this out. I would not be able to get this message out myself. So leaning in and, you know, asking an expert, asking you to come on the show and share with all of our listeners something, it feels safer. It's like, I don't have to have all the answers. I have this connection.
Yes. And what if our field was reimagined to come from that place from the very beginning, that we interacted with one another from our earliest days in our master's programs in a way that said, I know so much more than you, and you know so much more than me at the same exact time. Ooh. So we have to have each other. We have to learn to talk together about what's really going on, not just the what. You know, I'll sit in these supervision group dynamics, and I'm thinking about theory, and that's kind of my role in that setting, is to think about what is going on, how are they interacting, and why, what's showing up for them. But so often, especially in these, you know, master's level or just in their provisional license period of practice, the responses when somebody presents a case is about the what going on in the room. Mm-hmm. Like, well, have you tried this? What happened when this, you know, took place? Well, what do you think needs to happen next? But it completely misses the what is showing up for you as you experience this kid who has, you know, bit three other kids in the past, you know, 2 weeks, and you can't seem to get any change in their behavior. What does that actually feel like for you? And we'll get to the change process later, but we're supposed to connect right now, because that's a lot, you know, to have a kid that I can't seem to figure out how to help them stop biting other people. That's a pretty dysregulating experience, regardless of where you're at on the professional development spectrum, from novice to, you know, quote unquote master clinician. Mm-hmm. It's scary. It's upsetting. It's discouraging.
It's really like reality too, to expect us to be able to like check our nervous systems at the door and say, I am so smart. I don't feel this experience of like, I've had Jenga blocks thrown in my head, sand in my face to where like it's in my eyes. You know,
Kids fart on me. Like, like what do you do when that happens? You know, that was not in graduate school. You know, like when a kid gets on your back specifically to fart on you.
Like, yeah, there's no workbook sheet for that. You know?
No, and how do you make that a healing experience? You know, like,
Okay, so to say I'm excited about your training is an understatement. I am so very ready to learn more from you. And this next training that you have is in Gainesville, Florida, which is super cool because I live in Florida and it's near me.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that people listening know where to go to learn more from you, because that's going to be super cool. But I know you also have great supports for like people that are seeking EMDR basic training, certifications. Yeah. Your podcasts are incredible. You have like Jen and Melissa. You guys are like a community. I mean, just even seeing you guys and hearing you guys together is super cool.
Yeah.
Where can people go to learn more?
Yeah. So we, you know, as this conversation has sort of acknowledged, we have so many different resources that are available for people all along and across the professional kind of disciplines and their own professional development. So we have tons of free resources in the podcasts. There's in any of your podcast players, you can search Notice That or Beyond Trauma, which is a podcast that's specifically designed for clinicians and their clients. So resources for kind of just the everyday human walking around with a nervous system. And then we have also the Evidence-Based Therapist, which is really one of my most favorite podcasts that we do. That's Caleb and I, who's one of the other co-writers of SIP. And he and I get to talk about research. The quip of the podcast is where we read so you don't have to. But we hope you do, like it's the kind of parenthetical that's there. But we review research. And so we're really wanting to help clinicians with no barriers. It's free. If you have access to the internet, you can have access to these things. That it's free resources that are coming out every other week. And we hope that you find some moments of feeling seen by it, right? Whether it's just the EMDR podcast, or if it's Beyond Trauma, or it's the Evidence-Based Therapist. We also have a podcast that's the Burnt Out Educator. So in this time where so many of us with any interaction with the public school system are feeling the change and the difference, my wife, Olivia, and the executive director of Beyond Healing, Ryan, they are both public school in their past. And so they talk about that from a subjectifying what was objectified posture. So that's really beautiful. And then up into some of our resources that we've built specifically for people to continue their professional development. We have so many different training and consultation opportunities, a lot of them with continuing education hours associated with them, both from the National Board of Certified Counselors, as well as EMDRIA. We have three different trainings that are certified for advanced hours from EMDRIA. But all of that can be found at our website, which is connectbeyondhealing.com. We just launched our new website here at the beginning of the summer, and we're super excited about it. So if you go to that website, again, connectbeyondhealing.com, there's a For Therapists tab, and there's under that continuing education and additional resources. And I would love for you to just explore in there and let us know. We also have a Beyond Healing community, which is hosted by Mighty Networks, the same platform that Rotem's group is on. And in that community, you'll find clinicians from all over the world talking about what it means to be a psychotherapist and to practice from this bottom up, you know, nervous system attuned perspective, and how they find themselves in their practice, what's really going on. And we hope that as you see that larger vision, that we have these free resources talking about the what, why, and how of what's going on in the room, but that we also have this professional development track based in community, that you'll be able to feel that this problem that we have as a field, that we're experiencing burnout and our quality of care suffers. Mm-hmm. We believe that the answer to that is found in a community that is grounded in evidence-based research and a subjective invitation to relationship. So that's really what we have to offer. And we hope that there will be books and more trainings. And Jackie, I really hope that we'll get to work together very soon, because the energy feels kind of magnetic. And so I'd love to talk about polyvagal theory with you anytime.
Yes. Oh my gosh, it's so exciting. I'm thinking like even some things that I've consumed from you didn't even list. You have so many resources that incredible. And as you're saying that, I mean, it sounds like a lot of just wonderful information, but I'm thinking like the reality was like I'm sitting in the parking lot at Publix, a local grocery store, and I was listening to the episode of Melissa with her Frasier's table, and I was
Oh,
literally
yeah.
crying, and I was like, this is beautiful. She is like sharing her story with the world. And as clinicians, we can, I mean, many of us are trained in Frasier's table as EMDR therapists. EMDR stands for eye movement, desensitization, reprocessing. I could listen to that. I could experience kind of that human connection here in her story and then take it back to my practice. So like any one of these resources has the potential to change the trajectory of our work. So
And I would say our lives, absolutely.
yes. And our lives. Yeah, the triune brain one, the one on the polyvagal theory that you did two parts. I listen to that over and over again. I'm a little bit obsessive like that. When I find something that I really like, I just listen to it over and over and over again. So before I even met you, I felt like I knew you.
We were connected. That's right. When we talk about the reality of things, that our nervous system is so wired for connection, but so haunted by disconnection, I think that that connects us before we ever need to see a face or hear a voice.
So true. Okay, so all of the links that you just mentioned, or the link that leads to all of those amazing resources, will be below this video or in the show notes at playtherapycommunity.com. Or just feel free to Google Bridger Beyond Healing. Like, notice that podcast. I know you're like all over the place, and it's just wonderful. It feels safer.
Connections are happening. So that's really exciting. And another piece that, I do these podcasts a lot, and I feel like sometimes when somebody else comes on a show, they're there to promote something. And so they'll have a link to whatever they're trying to connect with. But I really have a request to your listeners that if you're interested to even just connect, to find more community that talks like this or that feels like this, Beyond Healing Community really is. And Jackie, I hope you can speak to some of this from your own experience, but the community is really, to me, such an exciting space. Where it's just as much yours as it is mine the moment you join. And that to me is so exciting.
Are you talking about okay, so at the time of this recording, I guess I've been in the Beyond Healing. It is a community. It's on the Mighty
Yeah,
Network
Beyond Healing Community.
platform. I like post pictures in there. It truly feels like I'm part of your group, which is so cool because I've learned so much from you guys. But I even like posted a picture from a sand tray, Frasier's table, and the sand tray
Oh
that
my
I went to a
gosh, so
martial class.
beautiful.
Yeah, and it feels neat to get like feedback or comments, and it truly does feel like I'm not alone in my work, and I love that. It's like we're all together, even when we're in our private practices and working with all of these difficult scenarios and connecting with these humans that are hurting, and we're not alone. We're together, and I love that Beyond Healing community. I literally love it. I updated my profile in there yesterday. I'm
Oh,
excited.
that's so exciting. Yeah, every time. And Jackie is a very contributive member, which I love that so much. Like, I really hope that it's a model for everybody because, again, with the community, the need for community in our field, I feel like we're so afraid of each other. In a lot of ways. And I hope that Beyond and the connection that you and I have, Jackie, can be sort of a beacon of hope that that doesn't have to be the case, that we can come together and know that we're more similar than we are different, and that you know so much more than I do, and I know so much more than you do, and that we can just say, let's share, let's connect. Let's talk about what each of us has experienced that brought us to the now, because that's what's really going to shape us moving forward.
Oh, I love that. I love it, love it, love it. All right, Bridger. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing all of these resources. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm so glad I got to come, and I hope we get to connect again soon, Jackie.
Yes, same. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.